Welcome to the Sunday podcast from LifeDean. Reflections on the upcoming Catholic Mass readings so you can make the most of your Sunday. Here's your host, the Bible geek, Mark Hart.
Welcome back to the Sunday podcast, everybody. I'm Mark Hart, taking a look at the solemnity of the most holy body and blood of Christ, otherwise known as the Feast of Corpus Christi. Write that down. Let's get to it. So this friend of mine, a couple years ago, he was really upset. He was born and raised Catholic, had left the church for a while, coming back, was wanting to get married in the Catholic Church. He asked me, he said, Mark, would you be one of my groomsmen? I said, sure. He said, my wife and I are going to get married on this cliff overlooking the ocean out in California. And I said, is it going to be a Catholic wedding? He says, oh, yeah. And I said, oh, no, because here's the thing. In the Catholic Church, you have to get married on holy and sacred ground. The Catholic Church, you have to get married in a church. And so I had to kind of explain to him why that was. And he didn't like the answer at first, but it was funny. A couple years into marriage, he called me and he said, you know what? Remember that conversation we had? I said, yeah. And it was a conversation where I explained to him, I said, you know, there's a lot of reasons that the church wants you to get married in an actual church, in front of an actual altar, okay, with the people of God and the house of God and a priest of God. And here's the reason why. And as I explained it to him, he understood the theology, but it wasn't until he had been married for a while that he understood the wisdom in the theology. You see, when we talk about, and you're saying, well, this is about Corpus Christi and the Feast of the Body and Blood, Mark, right? Talking about marriage. I'm getting there. You see, because marriage, like the Eucharist, is all about one thing, sacrifice. Because love without sacrifice, it ain't love. It's just a word, or it's a poem, or it's a sonnet, or it's a rom-com, but it's not actual love. To have love, you have to have a spirit of self-sacrifice. And that's why it's really cool, if you think about it, that the church says, no, when this man and woman are going to pledge their lives to one another, and they're going to enter into this marriage, and let's not forget, marriage is not just about a husband and a wife. It's about a husband and a wife and God, okay? Like the Trinity, 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. That's Catholic divine sacramental math, okay? So when you have a husband and a wife standing in front of an altar of sacrifice as they're beginning to become a sacrament, it's reminding them that if you are going to have any hope of living out this sacrament, especially in today's world, you better understand right from the first step that it's all about sacrifice. It's all about self-gift. And it's all about building this foundation on what? On yourselves? No, on God. On that third part of this divine equation. And that's why it makes such beautiful sense to have the husband and the wife right there in front of the altar of sacrifice as they now become the sacrament. Become the sacrament. Don't just enter into it, become it. And as we talk about that sacrament, it's a perfect arrow to this divine sacrament of the body and blood of Christ. Because whether you're married or single or consecrated or whatever it is, whatever your vocation that you're currently in or called to, the only way you're going to have the fuel to live out the vocation is if you are fueled by the body and blood of Christ running through your veins. But this idea of sacrifice was not just something that Jesus came up with in the Last Supper in the upper room. No, we hear in the first reading, way back in Genesis, this first priest, Melchizedek, and he does what? What does he bring out? Bread and wine. You know, sometimes we think that the traditions in the church were made up by a bunch of old white guys in Rome, a bunch of popes and bishops a few hundred years ago because they were bored. Like, what should we do on Sunday? We should get some bread and wine. That sounds good to me. Let's do that. That's not what happened. You go all the way back to Genesis, and in Genesis, we see these roots. Here's the first priest, the king of Salem. We call it Jerusalem now. He brings out bread and wine, and being a priest of God, he offers it to God. Why? Why do we offer sacrifices to God? What does God really need? Because, you know, he's God. Because when we sacrifice to God, we take our gifts and put them at the feet of God, we remind ourselves who God really is, that you're God and I'm not. If you go even further back in Genesis, you're reminded in Cain and Abel, it didn't go real well, right? Abel brings his best, Cain brings his leftovers, and God honors Abel's sacrifice because Abel is the one that gives his first fruits. He gives his best. Right here, we also see that Abram gives God a tenth of everything. The word for tenth is tithe. That's why still today the collection basket goes by when? During the sacrifice of the Mass. We can give God our tithe, part of our first fruits, part of our offering back to God. Why? Why do we sacrifice our money? Because he's God. It reminds us not to be in control. It reminds us to trust God. In fact, we really shouldn't look at it like we give him 10%. We should look at it like we get to keep 90, which is way better than the government and the IRS, but don't get me started. In the second reading in 1 Corinthians, what does St. Paul tell the people in Corinth? Look, I'm handing on to you what was handed on to me. And that was that night at the Last Supper, Jesus took bread and he goes through. This is my body. This is my blood. This is a new covenant. Why is this so important? Because St. Paul wasn't there. He wasn't one of the original 12 apostles. Why is this so important? Because this is happening decades after the resurrection. And what we start to see here is that this was the belief and the tradition in the early church. Even though St. Paul wasn't in the upper room, he had received this through oral tradition and through watching the early Christians that the apostles instructed. This is one of the most important Eucharistic verses in the entire Bible because it shows that this was the tradition. This is what had caught on. This is what was being done on the first day of the week for decades before he wrote to the people in Corinth. This is how he came to understand the truth about the Eucharist. This is what ended up leading him to the priesthood. This is why he speaks so intently about the Eucharist and about liturgy and about keeping it right and getting it right. And this is why in the gospel, it's so important when Jesus finds the boy with the loaves and the fish, and he takes that what? That sacrifice on behalf of the little boy, which is probably his lunch. And you know, we always talk about what a great and heroic kid this is. I'm not sure he was all heroic. He had 10 fishermen surrounding him, asking him for his lunch. He was basically getting bullied. But he said yes. He made a sacrifice, which was really important. And Christ multiplied that sacrifice. The same way Christ multiplies every sacrifice, big and small, whether you're single, whether you're married, when you sacrifice for the other, when you're selfless and you sacrifice for the other, you are being, in a sense, Eucharistic. And every time we do that is a celebration of the same way Christ pours out himself for all of us. And if you and I want to have the strength for the week to make it through the other 167 hours of lunacy online and silliness and sin, we need the body and the blood of Jesus coursing through our veins if we're going to have the grace to make it through another week. That's why we celebrate the Eucharist on what? The first day of the week. So days 2 through 7, we have a shot. God bless you this week.
For more Catholic content, check out lifeteam.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And remember to subscribe to this podcast for weekly reflections. God bless.